And welcome back to what should be the final episode of the year for us here at the Geeks Experience. We're gonna catch up on Andor and the holiday special.
What holiday special?
The Guardians holiday special.
The Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special.
Yeah, we'll go with that one first because Andor's gonna take us a while. But yeah, no, this is the last episode of the year as we go into Christmas and New Year break. We'll be back. We'll discuss whether or not we will do Avatar. I don't think we will.
The Way of Water.
Yes.
I don't know. It's I mean, the only interesting thing I would say about it is that it's been getting a lot of interesting I mean,
Reviews.
well, not reviews, but more sort of like James Cameron's comments about it and just filmmaking as a whole has been getting some interesting debate as of late. But I don't know. I don't know if we'll end up covering that because I think by the time we get back started up, it'll be a couple weeks after it's been out. But yeah, you
Yeah,
know.
it's not like a Wonder Woman thing where like it's like still fresh in the minds.
Nah, yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe if like it actually does make a bunch of money, then we gotta like, all right, let's figure out why. What's up with this one? You know.
Yeah, aside from the fact that we got Pandora back. But yes, we will be starting our this conversation with the holiday special, and it's a holiday special.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. It's very funny. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's
It's very short and simple.
yeah, it's like about 45 minutes, and its basic premise, I think, if you've seen the trailers, is just, hey, you know, Peter seems a little sad, and Mantis and Drax are like, let's get him a present, let's get him something that will make him happy, get him someone to make him happy.
And that someone is Nakamura, because they don't know where she's at.
Yeah, because they're like, well, we don't know where Gamora is, we can't help you find her, but maybe we can find someone else. Peter's hero, if you will. The long-awaited legendary hero, Kevin Bacon.
The man who danced his way to many people's hearts.
Yep, so, you know, it. I mean, I will admit, that's the funny part about this, is that it's actual Kevin Bacon.
Playing Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, himself, in you know, which is a. Which I will admit, that is sort of the one thing, some of the few things that's kind of interesting about Marvel. I think, as always, it's always been interesting about the Marvel Universe is that it more or less is kind of just our world, but with superheroes for a little bit. You know what I mean? Because it's not like Iron Man or Spider-Man lives in a different city. He lives in New York City, you know? And those are always like, that's some, kind of one of the interesting things about the Marvel Universe. It's not like DC where Superman lives in Metropolis. Batman lives in Gotham. Flash lives in Star City, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you
Well, I
know,
think it's Central City. Oh, well, whatever.
yeah, it's Central Star City. No, it's Star
It's
Labs.
Star. No,
Yes,
Star Labs is the.
is the lab, and then Central City. Yeah, I think
Yeah,
that you're right.
yeah.
But point is, you know, it's like they live in. It's very clear that they're in a fictional world, but in the Marvel universe, you know, it has crossover with the real world for a little bit, and granted, not always, because last time I checked, I think in Iron Man 3 they had to save the president, and that was not Barack Obama. So at the time, so I mean, I guess obviously they don't want to like Barack Obama's very busy; he's the president at the time. But yeah, no, it is fun just to have like you know Kevin Bacon just be there and kind of just be like, "What the fuck?" You know,
Yeah.
these aliens are trying to kidnap me.
Which is kind of funny because that's essentially the majority part of the episodes that's that them trying to kidnap Kevin Bacon. But it's also them just hanging out in New York and just being exposed to like the human world,
Yeah,
everyone thinking they're in costumes.
see those random dudes who dress up for pictures and stuff on the streets, and you know they're like, "It's Steve Captain America," and he's just like, "Get away from me!" What is this? Like, why is he running? I don't know.
But I think my favorite part was that, and I know this got a chuckle out of you, was the GoBot scene.
Oh, the guy just dressed up as like a GoBot, and like Drax wants to kill him. It's like, sorry, GoBots killed his family. I'm sorry. Like, I'll kill you. And then, you know, as they're doing the montage, they're just like, oh, they think they're like dress up performers too. They start taking pictures with Mantis and Drax, and they get a bunch of money. And just in the background, while Mantis is posing. You just see Drax just beating down on the GoBot costume. He's like, ah,
ah. Well, for one, apparently the GoBots exist in the Marvel Universe, which I think is a thing. It's either that or Transformers. I know Transformers.
I mean, I know Marvel did do the Transformers comics back in the day. So I guess technically, by degrees of separation, Transformers can be linked into the Marvel universe if you want to. Mm-hmm. I know G.I. Joe was something similar too.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
more to the point, they get a Kevin Bacon and they realize, hey, he's not who he says he is because he's a fucking actor.
Yeah, they're like, you're the one that saved that town by dancing, and you fought the legendary monster Jason Voorhees. Like, no, dude, those are just roles. I'm an actor. And it's like, an actor? The worst thing imaginable.
Which is, I think the funniest thing of, this is one of the last few things James Gunn is doing with Marvel, and he keeps the comedy going.
Yeah, I think all the jokes land how they land, and, I'm pretty sure there's some people that would probably see a meta commentary of people just don't really like celebrities or actors because they think they're assholes, it's obviously Art Mantis and Drax are like, oh my god, just the worst thing possible, an actor.
Yeah, and so but more to the point, this is essentially a Christmas special, and it has that Christmas theme, and it's getting together the people that you love.
Giving gifts. Getting gifts. Yeah, all that stuff.
Just essentially bringing joy to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a thing that this special really focuses on. Because it starts off with a very, ranking bass kind of... what's that?
It's like a...
Rotoscope.
Yeah, rotoscope kind of animation.
Yeah, it's a rotoscope animation of Peter teaching... What's his name? Korg? No.
No,
Kraglin.
Kraglin, yeah, about Christmas, and then Yondu shows up. It's like, get this, Christmas stuff out of here. Yeah. We're Ravengers.
Yeah,
we don't take handouts. This is, ridiculous.
Yeah, but then it's towards the end of the reveal. That's how what started essentially is a little collection of little miniatures.
Yeah, because Peter gifted him something, and he was like, get out of here. And then we sort of see a wrap up of that because Kraglin's experience was like, oh yeah, and that's how Yondu ruined Christmas for Peter, and. And that sort of is the sort of the chain reaction that starts up. We got to save Christmas for Peter. We got to get him back into the Christmas spirit.
But his Christmas wasn't ruined because
The Yondu took the gift that he found, and it was like the little miniature, like a little doll thing. He's like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
and he gave Peter his blasters.
Yeah,
it
serves the emotional moment. It also reminds you hey, remember this guy did kidnap Peter, but he's also kind of
the closest thing to a father figure
he ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just go hey, this is what Christmas is about. It's like bringing joy to others and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens because with Kevin Bacon's help, celebrity guest star that he is.
Yep.
He's like, we're bringing joy to Peter and to everyone around there because everyone's really like, what is Christmas? We had a whole fucking song number about Santa being a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, it's obviously the aliens, here in nowhere are like, what the hell is Christmas? What you guys celebrate this old man who comes into your house and just drops gifts, and if you're bad, he gives you coal or something. That's weird. You humans are weird,
So granted, it's very weird, yes. But to the point, yes. It's a very important moment for Peter and for a lot of people around him. To bring this joy, I think, and some of the presents are really cute and fun.
Yeah, everybody's just sort of does gift wrapping stuff, but obviously, before all that happens, obviously, once Peter realizes that they set up this Christmas thing and his gift is Kevin Bacon, he's immediately like,
"Oh no,
this is bad. We kidnapped a man. This is human trafficking. You get him. We got to get him back to Earth now.
He's your present." No!
Who gives a human person as a present? Peter having the obvious best reaction to that, and Groot in the background's being I am Groot. It's like, oh, now you think it's a bad idea? You will this man out to me. All right, so
yeah.
Yeah, so but obviously once Craiglin explains to Kevin Bacon, you know, the whole thing about like, oh yeah, you know, the guys are goofballs, but like they really like try to like, you know, get Peter into Christmas spirit again. It's like, oh okay, yeah, you guys are weirdos, but you doing this for a good reason. I guess I can, you know, hang out here, play some music for you guys, teach you the Christmas spirit. You know,
because like he went all out for his family back on Earth.
Kevin yeah, Bacon. he had a trunk full of presents and stuff. He was ready to go. He was waiting for, you know, his family to get back. And next thing you know, he gets kidnapped by two aliens. But yeah, you know. But the other like interesting thing about the special is that we do find out a little bit about Mantis's backstory a little more. That that her dad was also Ego. So that would that makes her.
And so, like, interesting fact about that as well is that there was a deleted scene that heavily implied that Ego did meet Mantis's mother, you know, therefore
brother and sister. Mm-hmm.
So that pretty much brings it all around with the fact of, hey, you know, Mantis is actually Peter Quill's sister, which is not a thing in the comics. But I'm fine with it.
I mean, if out of all the properties that Marvel changes the most with in terms of the MCU to from the comic adaptations, the Guardians have always been like the ones that like get the most changes. Because if you were to like look up the Guardians of the Galaxy before the movie came out,
they are way different.
They are so different. Like the only characters I think are remotely close to how they are in the comics are Rocket and Groot, but that's because. And even then, like, Rocket is supposed to have an Australian accent, you know? But, you know, you got Bradley Cooper doing it, and I don't think Bradley wanted to do an Australian accent.
And you're right, because, like, those two characters are just so synonymous. And even then, there's still a bit of changes they've done by the time they were adapted to film. Because there was a point where Groot spoke English. Like he actually spoke. He had, like, that kind of Hulk speak, though. It was like... Groot mad, Groot sad kind of shit. And, you know, Rocket was still the same smarmy-ass kind of guy he is.
But with an Aussie accent.
With an Aussie accent. And, you know, obviously from that point on, the movies were focused more on that aspect and changing everyone around. I think we talked about it before, the best example of, like, how the Guardians were before the movies was that one episode of Earth's Mightiest Heroes where we meet the Guardians. And they're all, like, super serious.
Yeah, they're all taking their job seriously. I mean, heck, Star-Lord is voiced by Steve Downes, the voice actor for Master Chief. Yeah. So, you know, he means business. You know, so...
I'm a space marine. I don't know how to do his voice. Man has a very distinct voice. I can't do it.
Yeah, very distinct.
No, but like to your point, like it wasn't like this like jukebox kind of guy, so chill. No, he was like an actual space guy,
which is interesting because we do know at least for the trailer for Guardians 3 that they do seem to don their like original suits.
Yeah,
for the most part.
Yes, that iteration of Guardians suits. Yes.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting if that whole arc is them to become, like, the ones you do see in the comics. I mean, I don't know if they will, but it would be kind of an interesting note to end the Guardians trilogy on with that. But, you know, back to the holiday special, you know, it's very, you know, like, obviously have some sort of emotional moment, like, Mantis, that's the best Christmas you ever give to me. I now have a sister, you know? And, you know, because obviously Mantis was like, I don't know how he's going to feel about it. Because, you know, Ego killed his mom. So I don't know if that's going to bring up bad memories. Like, but she's like, but Peter's like, no, don't worry about it. We're family now.
Well, yeah, because, like, throughout the past two Guardians movies, and to an extent, the you know, Endgame and Infinity War, Peter really values the idea of family. He lost his mother as a child. He found himself a family to like, and the moment that Ego came in,
he gave him a chance to have, you know, like his father,
a father figure, right? He has his family, but he always wanted to know who his father was. He always wanted a father figure in his life, right? And turns out his father's an asshole. And it's when he acknowledges like that, oh, I did have a father figure. It was Yondu.
Mm-hmm.
How much that guy has sacrificed for me, you know, and you know how he's cared for me, how much he loved me. Further explored into the holiday special, and how often he deals with loss, because like he ran away because he couldn't handle the loss of his mother,
which caught him, you know, which led him to get captured by Yondu, and then obviously he loses Yondu in Guardians 2.
Mm-hmm.
And in, you know, Infinity War, he loses Gamora.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like, man, I just wish Peter didn't do that. I was like, no, but that was always his character, though.
He's a person that like has a very hard time dealing with loss. I mean, that was the whole character arc for him in the Infinity War movie. Like, obviously, Gamora was like, hey, listen, if Thanos gets me, you gotta take me out, because I know where the Soul Stone is, you know, and if you know, you gotta take me, you know, you gotta kill me. So that way he doesn't find out, and you know, Peter
seems he can't do it.
Like, I mean, he eventually has to be coaxed to do it, but by the time he tries to, Thanos, you know, he has a reality stone. He just, you know, makes the
fuck you.
It's like, fuck you. But it's like, I like him, but fuck you. It's like, no.
Yeah, because like, to my point, like, he just can't do it. He had to try.
Yeah, he hesitates quite a bit.
Yeah,
knowing that, like, you know,
and for him to have that reaction, because for him is like, because his love for Gamora, he still can't handle the idea of loss. Because
mm-hmm.
if he had done it, my man would have been depressed like a motherfucker.
Yeah, he probably would be, because
he'd be more depressed than Gamora was.
Yeah, he loved Gamora, and like, he'd just be like, damn it. You know, and obviously, you know, with her being back, but not the same Gamora, and just running out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that also provides an interesting, you know, subplot for the next movie, right? Mm-hmm. Like, will this Gamora learn what she's been doing in this mm-hmm. universe? You know, that whole sort of thing.
Yeah, but like, to the point of you know, Mantis revealing that I am your sister, it's just, it just reminds Peter, like, he still has a family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still someone out there that he can relate to, someone who understands him, and someone who can love, aside from, like, you know, his found family,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, because that's what he was really looking for, right? So, sort of a place for him to be happy, because, like, it was like, he's so sad, he's trying to distract himself, and it's true, he is. And, but knowing that he has all these people around him, and especially a sister now, kind of makes him feel a lot, you know, makes him feel better. Spirit basically goes with that, the feel of, you know, a holiday spirit.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I totally recommend this special. They've been killing with the specials. They're 2 for 2 now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say killing it. They're like, they're good now.
Yeah. I won't lie though, but when you first said we're gonna be talking about the holiday special after you said Andor, I'm like, wait, are we Star Wars holiday special? Because I didn't watch that.
Is it on Disney Plus?
I don't know. If George Lucas has like said anything, you know, he's, I think out of all the things George Lucas ever made, the holiday special is the one he hates the most, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way in hell he would allow Disney to like have the holiday Star Wars holiday special on Disney Plus. It'd be fucking funny.
It would be a good
it'd be hilarious.
It'd be a good drunk thing to do.
Yeah, just like, could you imagine though, like, would there be actually people who just more subscriptions to Disney Plus if the Star Wars holiday special was on Disney Plus?
Question is, can you, like, you know, stand long, you know, can you watch the whole thing?
Watch the whole thing long enough, yeah.
That's the challenge. Yeah. That's gonna be a challenge somewhere. Like, you have to sit down and watch all of the Star Wars holiday special.
I mean, if they put subtitles on the Wookiees, then maybe.
Because I've only seen clips of the holiday special. I've never seen the whole thing.
All I know is that, like, a good chunk of it is just, like, the set piece of Chewbacca's family celebrating this Life Day event.
And, like, all the actors looking like they don't want to be here.
Yeah, and it's, like, very, and they just cut to various different, like, snippets. Like, yeah. Obviously the animated portion that had Boba Fett for the first time.
Mm.
I don't know, it's just a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, I just imagine like a 5 minutes of like.
If you ever seen that Chewbacca mom thing, it's that but 10 times worse.
Yeah, because it's just three Chewbaccas
just all doing
three Wookiees just going.
One's a kid, one's the mom, one's the grandpa. It's just so annoying.
Just me doing it right now makes it sound annoying.
Yeah, you now, like...
just trying to do, like, different, like, pitches.
Yeah, that obviously, like, it's not great, but it's very funny if you want to, like...
Yeah, it's like...
torture yourself for an hour.
Don't do a drinking game of that, let's say that. like I got a good Chewbacca expression. I would get tired of it real fast. Yeah. That's the Guardians of the Holiday special. Probably the only Hogwarts that I would recommend from any of these big companies stuff that isn't Rankin Bass or something. But on to Andor. So Andor, we have 3 episodes to catch up on. We're gonna speed through them real quick because I think only 2 really matter, and that's the last 2.
Well, I mean, the it's episode 10, 11, and 12. Mm. Episode 10, more or less, is the prison break episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some other things, some neat things with it. We learned that there's a double agent within the IBS that's working for Luthen. And he figures out, you know, the whole plan that they're planning before with Luthen, that whole raid that he wanted. What was his name? Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, Saw Gerrera.
He wanted him part of. They find out that, hey, the Empire knows that this is gonna go down, and you gotta warn Kruger and all those guys to back off, because you know they're gonna die. And Luthen is pretty much just like, well, if they don't go in, then the Empire is going to be suspicious that the information got leaked, and that might lead to you. So,
a lot of problems within the Rebel Alliance.
A lot of like moral questioning of like, is it worth losing these like 30 to 50 guys and a key member of the Rebel, the fledgling Rebel Alliance, die in order to keep the various other rebel stuff and like the secret network within to is it worth sacrificing the life? You know, it's literally just the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few kind of,
yeah, because like we need to figure out what we want to do, and like if we do this we're screwed, but if we don't we some people are gonna die.
Yeah, and it's like, do we risk the life of these rebels for the life of a double agent that's in the, you know, the Empire, who's given, you know, actual information and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's a very hard decision. And he, I'm pretty sure Luthen, I forget if it's episode 11, he goes to Saw talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Saw's very much kind of loses his mind for a little bit. It's like, you're crazy, man. You have people here looking for me, kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he's just like, listen, if I was, you know, because he starts questioning, are you like part of the Empire, because how would you know this? It's like, listen, if I was part of the Empire, I would have just told you to go with the rest of them, and I'm telling you not to go. It's up to us. And what, and you know, and so I was like, well, this is war.
Yeah, it's how it is, man.
They're gonna be playing chess now, because sometimes you gotta sacrifice your pawns in order to get all your other pieces lined up. Which, yeah, it's kind of, it's definitely one of those moments where it's like, damn, that's freaking crazy, you know? Like, they're willing to do all these sort of maneuvers just to, like, you know, not let the Rebel Alliance fall. Mm-hmm. Or even, like, you know, the start of the Rebel Alliance in a way. But yeah, no, episode 10 is mostly the prison break. It's a good one. You know, we have a... They put the plan into motion, you know. They start to liberate all the prisoners. Andy Serkis's character, you know, gives sort of a rallying speech of, like, hey, listen, they're never going to let us out. We got to rise up now, all right? We have control of the facility. Let's all go, guys. Come on.
Mm.
Only to, once they break the doors open and start swimming out, because it was an underwater prison, remember?
Yes, it was.
Andy Serkis' character's like, I can't swim.
Which is, we talked about this, that is the most funniest and tragic thing to happen.
Yeah, like, obviously it's funny because it's like, you know, guy breaks out from a... It's like if someone were trying to break out of Alcatraz and realize, oh shit, I can't swim. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a similar vibe of like, how the hell do I get out of here?
Yeah. It's kind of... Because like, he's like... It also says that he's kind of stuck there forever. Which I don't think he is, because he has to jump at some point.
Yeah, like, obviously, like, the rest of the guards are all hiding now, because it's like, the prisoners have rebelled, and they have weapons, and they don't want to die.
And we are outnumbered 10 to 1.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, let's just hide. Let's let them escape, all right? I don't want to die. Trying to keep these prisoners in. Mm. But yeah, you know, so... Yeah, so, the whole, that whole, also, it's very tragic, too, like you said, like, it's like, this guy who rallied everybody together at the end, where it's like, we're here, one way out, you know,
mm-hmm.
Let's go home, everybody, only to, once they actually get out, it's like, oh, fuck, I can't swim.
Well, more him than anyone else.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those, like, well, I didn't think I would get this far, honestly, and now I don't know what to do. But I honestly kind of hope that he just found a way to, like, maybe tear off one of the doors and make it, like, a makeshift raft and just, like, try to paddle his way to shore.
Or someone saved him.
Or someone saved him. Or, like, he managed... Or, you know, there might be some aircraft laying around. Maybe he just flew off. Who knows? I mean, obviously, you know, the open-endedness of Andy Serkis' character, I think, just sort of speaks volumes to... I think how good the writing is, where you're kind of just like, either any of those options work in the tone of the story in a weird way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's sort of episode 10, more or less. Not a whole lot happens, obviously, just...
Yeah, just escape. But in the next episode, we find out that Andor's adoptive mother passes away. And they try to essentially use it as a way to get him to come out.
Yeah, because I think everyone... sort of figures like yes, his mother, he was super close to him, he came back to visit her once before after the whole you know, the Aldani attack and stuff, so clearly, you know, he's still very important to her, so, you know, he's probably gonna come back for the funeral and stuff, and that's sort of what they're trying to plan out. They have people watching the house, all that stuff. And, of course, Andor doesn't find out until, like, he calls back to, like, you know... Because he knows at the time, like, he's like, I can't really go back, but just leave a message for my mother, you know, tell her I'm all right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I got bad news, Andor. Your mom's dead. He's like, oh.
I need to go see your funeral.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Yeah. But it's also, like, build up of, like, everyone coming together for the capture.
Yeah, you got a freaking... Zero coming, you know,
the dude who literally needs a W.
Yeah, Zero, and you know, his old lieutenant or whatever, who was helping him out during the first couple of episodes. You know, he calls him, he's like, "Hey, listen, Andor's mother's dead. They're thinking that he might be coming back for the funeral." It's like, all right, it's go time. You know, starts to get, you know, I think he steals his mom's credit card, I think, which is funny. I don't know. I think so.
It's just
sad. You know, this man has to go back to living with his mom.
And it's, you know, it's something he doesn't want. He wants to get rid of, be out of that situation.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, like, I don't know. So a lot of people have been saying, like, oh, man, he gives a lot of incel vibes. And, well, I do agree, he does give some incel vibes. I don't think it's voluntary, though. Right?
Yeah, it's sort of, like, circumstantial.
Yeah, because, like, he hates living with his mother. He wants to prove himself. That he can do, like, the job that he, you know, that he can do, that he's able to prove what he wants to do, right? That's the main idea. Andor, he had an idea for Rabbi Anders, like, no, we gotta catch this guy, he's responsible for all this stuff. And everyone's like, yeah, don't worry about it, it's just sort of, but like, no, but he broke the law.
It's like, I must maintain justice.
Yeah. He has a very, like, you know, keen sense of justice. And, like, he wants to catch Andor because, like, you know, because he let Andor go, shit went south for his career. He's like, if I get him back, maybe my career can come back. And maybe I can move out of my mother's house again.
Yeah.
Plus, there's this chick who kind of, I think, understands me. I might have a shot. No, you don't, dude. That's where the insult vibes come in. Because she is not interested.
Yeah. Yeah, more or less.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm not.
Well, I mean, but yeah, no. you know, that happens. I mean, obviously, and then the other portion is Mon Mothma's whole plotline so far, because she was talking to this, you know, her banker friend talks to her about, like, this, I think he's, like, I think he might be, like, a mafia dude or something, I don't know. But point is, he's very shady, and it's like, hey, we need some money to help me out with this thing. He's like, all right, cool. And it's like, how much have we got to pay you? Like, oh, I don't need to take any interest, don't worry about it. And it's like, yeah, I don't like that.
I don't like the sound of that.
What are you after then? Because if you're not taking any interest on these payment on the money you're giving us, then what do you want? It's like, well, as this is tradition with our culture and stuff, I have a young son. You have a young daughter.
No, we're not doing this patriarchal bullshit.
You know, we're not,
in her words.
Yeah, like she's very much like, no, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. You know.
So this, wait. This, you need to remind me. Was that what happened with her and her husband? Was it an arranged marriage kind of thing?
I don't remember, honestly.
Yeah.
Like it might be implied, but at the same time, like, it's not like.
It doesn't seem not loving.
No, like, it does seem like there is, like, it's just that, like, her husband's not really much into her politics kind of thing. Like, he doesn't really much care about her being in politics and stuff. He's like, eh, whatever, I'll just, you know, do stuff. And it does seem like they have some minor conflicts, but, you know, they've had a kid together. You know, it does seem like it's a decent enough relationship where they're not arguing with each other all the time. Although, yeah, like, it's very much interesting to see that, and she's initially like, no, I can't do that, you know, but then she finds out there's not a lot of money. I've been taking out a lot more money than I should have, and since the Imperial record keepers are gonna look into it, you know, it might lead her back to, you know, all the rebel stuff, and she clearly doesn't want that to happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she sort of more or less makes a decision, which is not a very good decision. Also, it is interesting that, like, with the daughter, like, we find out, like, she's, like, the main thing about their sort of strife is that the daughter likes to be in this little group of, like, very traditionalists.
Yeah, that was weird.
Like,
that threw me for a loop for a minute.
Yeah, like, she's more into, like, the old ways of customs and stuff of Mon Mothma's people. Because, like, Val, who, you know, The cousin who's into, like, the rebel stuff with Luth and stuff, visits, and she's sort of looking at it, and it's like, are they doing the things? Like, when did you start doing that? It's like, I haven't been really encouraging it at all. Like, it's all been her, honestly.
That's the biggest twist of the whole, one of the biggest twists of the whole show.
That she's a part of this, like, little club of girls that just, like to practice the old ways and stuff of their culture, which is, like, it's super interesting, because it's, like, you know, even Mom also explains, like, yeah, it seems like this stuff's starting to get more popular here than it was back home, which is weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well,
and I'm not saying it's a twist, like, oh my god. No, because, like, for the most part, we all thought she was, like, a rebellious teen.
Yeah, we thought she was going to be a...
Because, like, that's what it always is.
Yeah, with girls acting out against their mothers, like, the mom trying to be the stern one, and, like, you need to, you know, uphold your responsibilities, blah, 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 and, like, the girl's like, no, I want to be a rebel, I want to do whatever I want, kind of thing, and it's like,
I want to be free, mom, I want to change my hair every once in a while.
Yeah, you know, and then it turns out, oh, no, I want to be free to follow the old ways, mother. I don't want to be part of this,
Which, look, it's not a terrible thing to do.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. We're not saying that.
No, like, I don't think anyone ever would ever say that.
No, if you want to follow in a way that's traditional, that's fine.
It's just, it's a very interesting, like, plot twist, I guess.
Yeah.
For it to be that way.
Because, like I said, we thought it was what, like, we were saying earlier. She's trying to be rebel against her mother. She doesn't agree with her mother's stance on the stuff. But no, she's actually okay with a lot of these old traditional ways. And for some, that's like, what the fuck? Why are you, like, you know, want to follow these old traditional ways? But it's also like, she wants to, it's fine. So, I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with tradition. Right? Yeah. As long as you're not being an asshole. And she's not. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But it's such like an interesting twist because like one, we never really understood what her problem was with her mother.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it was this because that's what we were always meant to believe, because that's what we always think it is. But no, it's just that she doesn't view her mother following the old ways. And granted, it might be because like she's living in an area and she doesn't know her culture, and she wants to, you know, go forth into that culture, maybe not realizing why her mother doesn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably what it is. Now, she seems totally okay with this idea of like, hey, he's a nice boy. Why don't you go talk to him?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing, you know?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most interesting twists. Not the biggest revealing twist, I guess. Like, oh my god, because it's me for the universe of Star Wars. Like, no, this is a very like interesting twist for character.
Yeah, no, I agree with that one. Mm-hmm. I think that sort of covers most of the stuff for episode 11.
Mm-hmm. 12 is essentially centered around the big, funeral.
Yeah, the sort of the build up of like Andor coming back. He visits some people. So to get sort of the lowdown of what needs to be done, we have the one character. He's the black guy. I don't remember his name, but he's a bit of a mole now, I guess.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where he's like, I think I know where Andor is, you know, blah 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 blah, to the Imperials and stuff, and then obviously, you know, they're doing the funeral, and Andor's mainly just back now in Ferrix to just get Bix out, because he now knows that Bix has been held captive in the hotel, you know, going through all that interrogation stuff, and he's like, all right, I gotta get her out of here. Like, mm-hmm. It's probably the last thing I need to do, get her out, and just get, you know, a bunch of other people out, you know. And then just leave, you know. And obviously, Cyril and the other guys coming into Ferrix, Luthen and Val and Citri, those characters all coming into Ferrix as well, mainly because, again, their whole thing is like, we got to take Andor out, because that's a loose end to Luthen. And if, since the Empire is looking for Axis, you know, the dealer that like sold the stuff and information for Andor, you know, they want, that means they want Luthen, and they can't let Andor be living knowing who Luthen is. So it's pretty much like everything's sort of like coming together like a powder keg, if you will. And one little spark, you know, could easily set the whole thing off and everyone goes crazy, right?
Mm. Which just happens.
Yeah, which
literally happens. Literally a spark blows off. But to the point, like, Andor feels guilty that he had to wrap Bix into this. Because Bix didn't want any of to do this. She was just passing off of information.
Yeah, like, she was just sort of, like, the detail person, you know? Like, hey, I got some stuff, you know, that sort of thing. Like obviously she doesn't know who Luthen is. Because, I mean, Luthen's very secretive. He would never show herself to her or whatever. And also, she didn't know where Andor was. He just sort of comes and goes and, like, that sort of thing. So, like, she was sort of put in a situation where she can't really, like, help out or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, she was even questioned about, like, hey, this rebel guy, is he the guy that was giving you all the information? And she's just sort of like, because she knows, like, if she says no, they're probably still going to put her back into the interrogation room to get, you know, tortured again.
Yeah. Like it's one of those things where, like, I was talking to a coworker and he was saying, like, how much he hated the boyfriend. But I was like, no, but the boyfriend, from his point of view, thought that Andor was a threat. And if we didn't get any context about what happened with Andor, I can totally understand where he was coming from.
Yeah, in a weird way, right?
Like, he got roped into something he shouldn't have. And he was doing what he thought was best in protecting his girl. And, like, the same thing with Bix, right? Because, like, she got roped into something that she didn't, you know, expect it to go down this way.
Yeah.
And that's why Andor feels guilty about it. And that's why he tries to rescue her. But to the main point, at the center of the funeral is, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her name, but the adoptive mother of Andor. She gives essentially this speech of, like, we have to fight back.
Yeah, because, like, been, it's her last message. Like, the droid plays it out as, you know, her last message. And, yeah, it is more or less, like you said, it's a whole speech about, like, you know, the Empire, like, grows in the darkness. So when we sleep, it keeps growing and festering. And now we, you know, it's here. And I don't know if we can stop it, but, you know, we got to fight. You got to fight the oppression, fight the Empire, all that stuff. And obviously, here's, like, the thing is, like, they sort of start the, I think they start the funeral service a little bit too early, which causes the Empire, you know,
to stagger. Outpost
that there to just be, like, be there to, like, sort of, like, show a force, like, hey, we're not approving of what you guys are doing right now. So for them to just then watch a friggin' hologram projection, just tell them, hey, fight against the Empire, you know, stand up against oppression, you know, it leads to a bit of a, to one of the officers sort of just being like trying to cover droids, like, enough of this, this is all, you know, get out of here, disperse, which leads to a bit of a riot, and then, you know, having to, you know, push people back, all that stuff with riot shields and stuff like that, and then the one kid who, I forget if we mentioned this the last episode, the last time we talked about Andor, whose dad was interrogated and died.
Yeah.
Pretty much was like, created a makeshift bomb, like a pipe bomb, basically.
And to your point, a spark blew.
Yep, and like just straight up threw it at the Empire guys, which caused an explosion, which caused another series of explosions of like grenades and all that stuff, just all that exploding. And then now the Empire's like, open fire, and then just start shooting just all these
mayhem. Constantly
goes yeah, on. Like shooting and killing civilians and stuff. And in the, you know, in the chaos, Andor was able to get Bix out. And Deidre, the Imperial officer lady, who's, you know, been trying to catch Andor and all this, gets, you know, caught up in the crowd and, like, is like seems like she's about to get trampled to death until Cyril shows up, like, to, like, pretend like he's, like, you know, dragging her out somewhere. And then, like, you know, saves her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, no, yeah, that's good old Cyril for coming in and saving the last day. But yeah, no, essentially this ends up sitting around, where, you know, Andor and his friends escape, but he confronts, the dealer,
Luthen,
and he's like, either you kill me or you take me in. Essentially saying, listen, I'm going to follow with my adopted mother's last words. I'm going to fight. I've been through the shit. I'm tired. I'm done. I'm going to fight. They made me build parts for something I don't know what it is. Well, we know what it is.
Well, we know in the post-credit scene, yes. Yeah,
because at the end, we get a post-credit scene and we find out what they were building, which was the Death Star.
Yeah, part, like the last bits of the Death Star, the, you know, the laser, laser bits.
Which kind of gives you the idea of how much time is passing by. Right? Because, like, we know what happens with him in a Death Star. He gets blown up at the end of Rogue One. So now we have a time frame of, like, from here to here, where the story can go.
Well, I mean, I believe when they said, like, because I believe it is getting a second season, they said that the second season was more or less going to be a bit more closer to the Rogue One, to where it is in Rogue One. Where his story is. So, yeah. That is sort of the interesting time passes. Because I know, you know, end of episode 3, they had already started, like, you know, building the Death Star. So, you know, Andor's time in the prison, which I'm pretty sure was, like, at least a couple months. You know, sort of leads into, like, oh, yeah, they were building this stuff and sending it. And they're using parts to make the Death Star and stuff, like to put the final touches to it. But yeah, Andor, you know, he comes to Luthen, and like Luthen, like, you know, he gets the gun, like, and looks at it, and he sort of just smiles and just goes, "All right, then, you just made this whole lot interesting."
Oh hell yeah, he did.
You know, so that's where the show ends, basically. We are getting the second season.
That was already confirmed.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting stuff to do.
Yeah, and I think it ends in a place where I'm very interested to see where it goes. I know for a lot of people, it's just weird to focus on a character that whose fate we already know and all such. But at the same time, what the show essentially centered around is just the idea of the Rebel Alliance. The things that go in the background, the things that we don't see, like the people on the ground, like we said in the past. Because, like, for the most part, a majority of Star Wars was always centered around the Jedis, the Skywalkers, and, like, other aspects. Here, it's just people. Like, we were talking about it, like, a while. Like, remember when we said about Cyril and his mother, where he just ends up being back home with his mom, eating some cereal.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the most normal thing you could see in Star Wars. And it makes it the most human thing ever.
Yeah, like, I think that's sort of the main attraction of Andor is that, you know, it has that sort of human down to earth aspect to it. You know, there isn't a whole lot of, you know, force magic, all that stuff. You know, it's just, you know, the people having to live through all the Empire stuff. You know, like, and it is sort of just like that sort of rising of the rebellion, you know, like, yeah, the rebels are here, but they're sort of a loose group of rebels, you know? Mm-hmm. And here we're sort of seeing that sort of rise of the rebellion in a way, you know? This sort of, like, the various events that lead to, yeah, you know what, let's let the Rebel Alliance form, let's all come together and stuff. Because, I mean, heck, when you look at it, the events of this final episode, you know, the Empire firing on a bunch of civilians, unarmed civilians, if you will, like, I'm pretty sure, like, once we get back to season two, that's gonna be a big, big factor for season two. Because already, like, you know, the whole Aldani raid and stuff was a big factor because it caused the Empire to clamp down harder and stuff, leading to more shenanigans and whatnot. So, you know, the idea of this sort of event happening where the Empire straight up just fires on a bunch of unarmed civilians, which, I mean, they could spin it as like, yeah, well, one of them had a bomb and stuff, so of course they would fire back. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, most of these people, it was only one guy who threw a bomb in there, and the rest of them were armed. So it could lead to more, like, strife, or, like, more motivation for both the Empire and the Rebels of, like, hey, all these innocent people died. It's time to, like, stand up, you know, rise up against the Empire, because this has gone too far, while the Empire would be like, we got to clamp down harder. We got to, like, make sure we put people back in their place. You know, it's causing that sort of
friction
that leads to, you know, the start of the rebellion and, like, you know, the kickoff point of the Galactic War, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're right with that you know, thought process, just that we are now seeing what essentially could be a season two, or just, like, all the fallout from such things. Because, you know, the Empire is starting to slack off, so we know this has to come back for something. And seeing it happen now, I think it will be really interesting to see where it goes. Especially with all that shit. Goddamn. But yeah, I think that's the best way to end this episode with Andor. I think it's a great show. Go watch it. It's a little slow, so if you're someone who doesn't like slow shows, probably not the best place to watch. Watch it in increments, I guess. I think that's probably the best thing to do.
Yeah, this show is definitely a slow burn. And some people like that, some people don't. I was mostly fine with it. But yeah, I think a lot of the praises for this show have been pretty spot on. Like, it probably is, like, one of the more daring and interesting Star Wars shows we've gotten in these past couple of years. I mean, obviously, yeah, Mandalorian's pretty great, but some people like to ding it a bit because of the second season being a bit too fanservice-y.
Mm-hmm. I agree to that.
Boba Fett, you know,
was not what people wanted.
Yeah, not what people expected it to be. Then we had a season 7 of Clone Wars, which, you know, was pretty fine for the most part for most people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bad Batch, also fine for the most part. But here it's like it's very exceptional. Like, oh yeah, they went kind of baller.
Yeah, you know? they went farther than most have.
Yeah.
Cause like it felt different enough. Like with Mandalorian, it felt different from what Star Wars were used to.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it felt more like a Western. Here it's way, way different. So yeah, I'm totally down for second season two. Wait and see. But anyways, guys, it's the end of the episode. Thank you for checking us out. Be sure to follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Geeks Centurions. And if you go to Instagram, where we're most active, you'll find the link to all the podcasts that we're officially part of, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, all the like. And you'll find a link to the YouTube where you can find the video version of this. Like, comment, subscribe on there. And we have a Patreon for support. And yeah, guys, that's been this week's this year's final episode. Mm-hmm. Just a wrap up of everything we've been talking about. And yeah, it's been me, your boy Eli.
It's been me, Joe.
You guys have a good one. Peace.